Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. Well, we want to start today by saying happy birthday to the National Park Service. It is the 100th anniversary of the founding of the system created by President Wilson in 1916. President Obama marked the occasion earlier this week with the creation of a new national park in Maine's North Woods. When we talk about national parks, sometimes it's the big ones that come to mind, Yellowstone or Yosemite or maybe the Grand Canyon. But today is a good day to point out the national parks right here in Massachusetts and New England. Here's Congressman Michael Capuano speaking at a National Park System celebration on Boston's waterfront today.
I, for one, I never knew we had islands in Boston Harbor. And I'm not kidding. I didn't know it. I think I was in my 30s before I went to any place that I thought was a national park. That's why I personally think it's so critically important to have national parks in urban areas.
And some of our national parks are in urban areas, including the Harbor Islands, the Lowell National Historic Park, and the Boston African American National Historic Site, among others. That's on top of almost 30 state parks and thousands of other conservation areas throughout the region. So today we're going to talk about parks, especially national parks. Joining us in studio is Jack Clark. He's Mass Audubon's Director of Public Policy and a former park ranger at the Cape Cod National Seashore. Jack, welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
Also on the line with us from Lowell is Celeste Bernardo. She's superintendent at Lowell National Historical Park and a 30-year veteran of the Park Service. Celeste, welcome.
Thank you very much.
And listeners, we want to invite you to join this conversation. How are you celebrating the National Park Centennial today? Are the parks important to you? And what are some of your favorite New England parks to visit? What do you think we should do to further protect these national treasures? You can call us at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK, or send us a tweet at Radio Boston, maybe a photo of what you're doing today. There are hikes taking place around the state today to mark this centennial. But Jack, I want to start with you. Let's talk just briefly first about the history of the park system, because in 1916 also Mass Audubon opened its first wildlife sanctuary. So there were things happening simultaneously there.
Thank you, Deborah. We did. And Mass Audubon today is among the oldest and largest conservation organizations in the country. And our founding mothers, Minna Hall and Harriet Hemingway, were close to Teddy Roosevelt, who also thought the National Park Service was a good idea. And then 100 years ago, we established our first wildlife sanctuary at Moose Hill in Sharon, Massachusetts. Hmm. It's now one of our over 100 sanctuaries we have, encompassing 35,000 acres of land from the Cape and Islands out to the Berkshires.
Hmm. I'm just wondering, when you talk about conservation, and then you talk about parks and recreation, right? There must be some efforts that have to be made to balance those two things, right?
There is, especially with the National Park Service. For instance, the Cape Cod National Seashore, where I worked for 10 seasons, the last time I was wearing that Ranger Stetson hat, loved to death. 4 million visitors a year, a very fragile ecosystem with a series of barrier beaches and salt marshes and that sort of thing. So it was a matter of loving, appreciating, understanding the natural beauty of that whole area, and at the same time protecting it from overuse and overappreciation.
Right. I think it's the 14th, right? Most popular park in the country all the national parks is the National Seashore.
It is. You know, 25% of the nation's driving population is within a 24-hour distance of the Cape Cod National Seashore. And sometimes we think they all come.
Well, Celeste, tell us about the Lowell National Historic Park. How are you celebrating the centennial today?
Well, we have a lot of activities planned. Today we had a flag raising. We were fortunate to have Congresswoman Tsongas, who is a huge supporter of the parks, with us today. So we were thrilled by that. A lot of big community celebration. We're a partnership park in Lowell. We celebrate the legacy of industrialization, and we are also very much about the worker, and we do a great deal with the community here. There virtually isn't anything I think we do in Lowell without a partner, in either nonprofits, the city, the state governments, developers. We work with all different types of folks here in the city.
Well, I do want to talk about that in just a minute, about this increasing private support for parks and you know, the good and bad that can come out of that. But I want to talk a little bit about Lowell because it's an urban park and it's a little bit different when we talk about the Boston Harbor Islands as an urban park. I think Lowell has a different feel to it. And I'm just curious as to whether you can compare it to what Jack just told us about the National Seashore being loved to death. Is that happening in Lowell as well?
Well, it depends on what types of programs that we're talking about. When we have an education center that we serve over 50,000 teachers and students, and there are certain times of the year when we're at capacity. We have boat tours that we run on the 5.6 miles of canals. There are certain times when we're at capacity with those. But overall, when you look at spring and fall, we'd like to have more visitors coming. Or in the winter, if we can get them out in the New England winters to come. So I think you see that with there are parks that are really overrun at certain times of the year, and other points of the year, visitation drops off a little, and we'd like to try to attract more folks during those times.
I'm wondering, you've been with the Park Service for, what, 30 years throughout New England? Do you think that New England's parks are unique? How are they different from parks in other parts of the country, do you think?
I'm not sure that they're unique. I think that we've had a lot of partnership parks more recently that are being established. Lowell was a partnership park. Boston National Historical Park is a partnership park in that the park is comprised of resources that are not all federally owned. New Bedford Whaling National Historical Park is another one of those models. So the Park Service is here. We own some facilities, but a lot of the historic sites are owned by private partners or other organizations or agencies. We also have in New England a lot of what they call national heritage areas, and those too are the Park Service works in technical support, but a lot of it is community-based and nonprofit organizations that it's sort of interpreting a landscape of significance because of its culture or its heritage. Mm. So I think New England has done a great job in terms of a lot of support. People love parks. They're proud of their history and their heritage and their natural areas, and they want to preserve those. And so they've asked the Park Service, Mass Audubon, state parks to actually come to their communities. That's what happened in Lowell. It was the people of Lowell who called for a national park because they recognized that their history was important here.
You know, we mentioned this event earlier today with Congressman Capuano, and I want to bring a little bit more of what he said today into our conversation. He was at the centennial celebration at Christopher Columbus Park in Boston today, and he talked about some of the challenges for the park system, and of course he said a big problem is funding. Let's listen.
It's easy to add locations to the list of parks, but if you add location and location and location and you don't add money to preserve, money to improve, money to hire more people to do that work, what have you accomplished? In some ways, you've actually diminished the rest of the system.
That's Congressman Capuano speaking today. Jack Clark, I want to ask you about that because we've heard a lot about particularly deferred maintenance costs and what a problem that is for the park system. Is funding a huge issue and why?
Funding is a huge issue. Right now, we probably provide $3 billion a year for our national parks, and it's not enough. The maintenance backlog alone is $10 to $13 billion. And I read a study this morning from a former cabinet secretary and that said the Park Service probably needs $92 billion a year to keep even, to take care of what they've their backlog, and to maintain the properties they have. You mentioned earlier in the segment that President Obama yesterday designated the Katahdin Woods Katahdin Woods and Waters as a new national monument, which will be under the jurisdiction of the National Park Service, and it's adding 87,500 acres to the park system. However, Roxana Quimby, former owner of
Burt's Bees,
right, who donated the land, also donated $20 million to steward it and promised another $20 million. But we expand our parks at great peril when we don't provide the money to take care of them.
And is that the way we're headed? Is that the only way we can fund these new things, is if we have a very wealthy benefactor like the Quimbys be able to donate this land to the government? And that came at great controversy, too.
It did. The Congress was not interested in establishing a national park with a budget. So the president is able, under the Antiquities Act of 1906, to designate the national monument without congressional authority. That's how that happened. Mm-hmm. But let me use as an example the 2011 earthquake in southwest of Washington, D.C., that resulted in extensive damage to the Washington Monument. It was a $15 million price tag to fix that, and Congress provided the National Park Service with $7 million and told them to go find the rest. Fortunately, David Rubenstein, a billionaire philanthropist, provided the rest of the money, right. But that's not the way it should be.
Yeah, right. I want to get some listeners in the conversation here because our phone lines are lighting up here. We're asking you, what are you doing to celebrate the National Park Centennial today? Do you have a favorite New England park to visit? Call us at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also send us a tweet at Radio Boston. Kathleen is calling from Stowe. Kathleen, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I just, we have been to National Seashore and to Lowell and actually did a 5-week cross-country trip where my kids became junior rangers in 10 different national parks.
Wow.
And I have to say, Minuteman is another fantastic park, but we used Lowell as part of a homeschooling with one of my sons, and I was probably up there for 2 months. The two of us were up there 2 or 3 times a week, and the websites are phenomenal. The educational supports are phenomenal. The Tenet Museum in New York, like when you're talking about like late 1800s, it's just so amazing to be able to use the national parks that way. And I think people underestimate just how incredible they are.
All right. Well, there you go. There. Thank you very much for calling, Kathleen. Celeste, that's a little hats off to you there, trumpeting everything in Lowell. What do you think, though, about what we were talking about earlier in terms of this lack of funding and what needs to be done to try to make sure that the parks have enough money?
Well, it's always a difficult one when you talk about money for national parks. I think, you know, to bring a little perspective, when you look at land agencies within the government, the National Park Service has actually done better than a lot of land agencies. The dilemma, as already mentioned, is that the increase in costs, and I don't want to say too much critically about adding parks, because I think it's important that we continue to recognize, as the country changes and the value of what we're preserving historically, there are many sites now that would not have been designated as sites 25 or 30 years ago, or I should say longer, I should say 50 years ago, right? Early parks were really focused on, not focused as much on talking about women's history, social history, the LGBT community. We're bringing in parks now that are really reflective of the diversity of our country. And so that's the dilemma in terms of the idea of not bringing on parks because of funding. It is a challenge.
Right.
It is a challenge.
Right. I'm told that George Price, the superintendent of the Cape Cod National Seashore, is on the line with us. And I want to say hello to you, Mr. Price, and thanks very much for joining in the conversation.
Hello to you, and happy birthday to everybody.
Happy birthday, George.
Especially to my friend Celeste. Celeste knows I worked up in Lowell for about 15 years, and now I've been down here at Cape Cod for over 11 and a half. And Celeste's absolutely right. At the time when Lowell was established, actually, there was a lot of controversy, because I don't think people could really understand the concept of the Industrial Revolution and what was that all about. And down here at Cape Cod in 1961, this was not a slam dunk park either. because this was very controversial because it involved procuring private land and making a federal park out of it.
Mm. Right, and even, that... Go ahead. I'm sorry, George.
Well, I was going to say it was very controversial. Tip O'Neill was hung in effigy in front of the East Ham Town Hall, and Kurt Vonnegut wrote an article about, was this a communist conspiracy? Mm. So I think the concept of parks has evolved over time, and in 61, Cape Cod was a very early partnership park, and that we have 44,000 acres in our boundary, but we only own 27,000 of those acres in fee ownership by the United States.
Well, you know, we've been talking, I just want to make sure we have time for some callers here, George. We've been talking about money and about how difficult money has been. And, you know, I've read that certainly this was a big political effort on the part of the New England delegation, the Massachusetts delegation, to get the National Seashore established. I'm wondering, has things dramatically changed without Ted Kennedy and John Kerry? And do you feel that you have to do something different to try to get enough support and money, if you will, for the National Seashore?
Well, I think, don't forget, those people were in office during the time when Congress was different and earmarks were different and everything else was different. And I think we certainly recognize the support we get from the congressional delegation, from our senators and our congressmen. So I think times have really changed. The complexion of Congress has changed. And I think just we as a country have to decide where our priorities are. One of the things that Celeste talked about, she's correct, the Park Service has done better with land management agencies, but when you take a look at the federal pie where your income tax go, there's only 5 to 7% of the president's budget that's discretionary, and the Park Service doesn't even show up as a sliver in that pie because we're such a small agency compared to the rest. So I think it's very difficult for our folks on the Hill in order to advocate for us, and we all have to figure out where is it that we want to go as a nation in the future, especially as we have the opportunity to take a look at parks during the centennial year.
All right, Jack, you wanted to add something here.
Yes, and always nice to hear from George Price. George and I wore Ranger hats together years ago. But the additional cost we have is the cost of climate change. And we see that at the Cape Cod National Seashore, which is a seashore experiencing erosion and sea level rise.
I'm wondering, George, can you talk about that just a little bit? What are you seeing because of climate change?
Well, you're absolutely right. You know, just in our lifetime, we've had a sea level rise of about a foot. Huh. And for those that are still, you know, wondering if climate change is real, you just have to come down to the seashore and see some of the changes that we're experiencing. And that has direct impact on shoreline facilities. Obviously, it has an impact on the six towns that are down here because it also affects the towns in the neighborhoods. And we, as a collective group out in the Outer Cape, have to decide what our future is going to be over the next 50-100 years. Mm.
George, is that the biggest challenge facing the National Seashore right now, would you say?
It's certainly right up there. Mm. We have challenges in an urban area that are fundamentally different than a big natural area because we have both the natural and the cultural issues to deal with. Mm-hmm. And when I make a list of our challenges, they pretty much match the same challenges of the six towns. And that has to do with the demographic changes, the cost of living for folks, the changing demographics of our visitation. We're still, the goal of the centennial is to outreach to certainly younger people and more diverse background folks. So they can take a look at what parks have to offer, both for their benefit and for their future children's benefits.
All right. Well, George, thanks very much. I'm told that we also have someone else from the National Parks area. The superintendent at the Boston Harbor Island National Recreation Area is on the line. Giles Parker is on the phone from Boston Harbor, where he is also celebrating the National Parks Centennial today. Hi, Giles.
Hey, how are you doing? Happy birthday to the 413 National Parks, and hello to George.
Okay, well, George just left us, but he's now off the line. But I want to know what you're doing to celebrate the birthday today, Giles.
We're starting off a three-day celebration for the Park Service downtown, right at Long Wharf North, where boats typically depart for the Boston Harbor Islands. We had free ferry service all day. We have a stage right now with concert going on and 18 tents. But then all the fun continues tomorrow and Saturday at the Charlestown Navy Yard, where Rosie the Riveter, the female worker in World War II, is going to invade the yard with everything from swing dancing and swing lessons to World War II cartoons being played.
So, Giles, we've been talking about some of the challenges facing the parks, especially as the, as you look forward at this centennial. What do you say about the Boston Harbor Islands?
I'd say first off is visibility and raising the profile of the islands themselves. As Celeste mentioned to you, you know, we started to bring in a new model of parks to the Park Service and really focusing on urban areas and different types and different models of parks. It doesn't necessarily mean that's translated into people knowing about the nationally significant resources right in their backyard. And so raising the profile so that people know to come out to the islands or to Bunker Hill or to our partners on the Freedom Trail.
Hmm. All right, I want to make sure that we get some listeners in here. Linda is calling from Medway. Linda, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
Happy birthday, National Parks.
Happy birthday, National Parks. What would you like to tell us?
Well, I just returned from a trip. I returned yesterday from Acadia National Park, which is also celebrating, I think, its 100th birthday.
Mm-hmm.
And it was my first time there, and it's the most beautiful place I've ever been.
Acadia National Park up in Maine.
Up in Maine, Mount Desert Island.
So that's your vote. That's your vote for one of the nicest parks. Have you been to some of the ones around Massachusetts?
Well, I've been to the Harbor Islands. I've been to the National Seashore many, many times.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, Linda, thanks very much for your call. We also want to hear from Bill, who is calling from Somerville. He's also calling us about a park. Bill, you're on the air. Bill, are you with us? I think we lost Bill. How about Bill? Are you there?
Yes. Hello. Can you hear me?
I can hear you now. Yes. Hello.
Okay. Yeah. Hi. I'm calling about a rumor I've heard that we have here in Somerville, Mass., the smallest national park in the system. It's Paul Revere Park on Broadway and Main Street. It commemorates the great famous midnight ride of Paul Revere.
Anyone familiar with that? Jack is shaking his head no. Celeste?
No, I don't think that's a national park.
I think that may be a rumor, Bill, but I appreciate you definitely hit the right folks to answer that question. nobody knows if that's actually accurate. I want to take some more calls here as we continue to go. Sarah is calling from Lowell. Sarah, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hello?
Hello?
Hi,
hello?
Sarah. Can you hear us okay?
Yeah, I can. Can you hear me?
Yeah, your question is?
Excellent. Yeah, hi. I'm actually a Student Conservation Association intern with the National Park Service in Lowell right now. And I was wondering if you guys could talk a little bit about the cultural heritage conservation that goes on through the NPS. I'm doing work with the Collections Conservation Branch, and we work a lot with the objects that come from the historic sites and making sure that those are preserved for everyone. And I was wondering if you guys could maybe talk about the work that the NPS does with regards to objects and cultural heritage.
All right. Celeste, I think you're the one to answer that question.
Sure. And she brings up a really great point in that, you know, people oftentimes when they think about the National Park Service, they end up thinking about Yellowstone and Yosemite and those sorts of natural areas, and yet there are more historical sites within the National Park Service and even cultural sites, historic sites within many of those natural areas. When you think of all of the artifacts and objects, archaeology, historic structures that are associated with national park system that need to be conserved and preserved, we employ a whole host of curators and archaeologists and historic architects, all different variety of preservationists, museum specialists that conserve and protect all of these wonderful objects and structures within national parks. So that's part of our expertise in conserving the nation's heritage.
You know, I just want to, we've got about a minute left here, and I'd like to touch down with each of you about what do you think visitors should do? It seems that there is an awful lot of affection for these parks.
Right.
So what do visitors do to try to help you address some of these challenges? And I'd like you each to quickly answer that question. Jack, I'm going to start with you.
Well, you know, the National Park Service has been called America's best idea, and our job is to protect it for the next 100 years. Mm-hmm. And there's ways to do that by visiting national parks, letting your congressman know that they need the funding. Congresswoman Nikki Tsongas in Lowell, Bill Keating on the Cape. It's important that Congress knows that these resources are important to this and future generations.
Giles, out there in Boston Harbor, what would you say? What should visitors do to help the parks?
Well, I think it starts with our goal for the next 100 years as well, is to connect and create our next generation of visitors, advocates, and supporters. I mean, we can't do it alone. Today, we had Senator Markey, Congressman Capuano, and Lynch, who have been out to the islands. I think they needed not just hear from the parks themselves, but from visitors and neighbors of the parks about the national significance and the economic impact of these parks as well, which create jobs and drive the tourism industry as well.
Okay, Celeste, last word.
Go to a park near you. There's 15 national parks in Massachusetts. There's external programs that can help your communities. Go to www.nps.gov. You can / and put in your state. It will tell you where all the parks are in your area. And be sure to look it up, because you might be surprised that there's a park right in your backyard that you can help.
All right. Celeste Bernardo, superintendent at the Lowell National Historic Park. Jack Clark, Mass Audubon's director of public policy and a former ranger at the Cape Cod National Seashore. Giles Parker on the phone with us from Boston Harbor, celebrating the National Park Centennial today. Thanks to all of you for being with us.
Thank you.
Come visit.
Stay with us. There is more ahead. This is Radio Boston.